Welcome to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. You are listening to a technology presentation from November 2014. Ms. Sophie Bramel, independent journalist, as the debate leader, presents 3D Printing in Textiles, a debate featuring Mr. Carsten Bleimiel, owner of MRC Materials Research and Consulting, Mr. Jörg Hartmann, Head of Fashion and Technology, H. Stahl GmbH & Co. And Ms. Pia Hinze, Independent Fashion Designer.
Okay, I think that's done. So, can each of our speakers introduce themselves, please? Pia?
Thank you. My name is Pia Hinze. I'm a designer and an artist, and I do work a lot with 3D print, and I'm really interested in combining fashion and technology. And I studied art, and now I study art, and before I studied fashion design in France, and now I'm based in Munich again, where I come from. And yeah, I designed this dress for my graduate collection. It's fully 3D printed in 8 parts, and yes, that's me.
Hello, my name is Carsten Bleimiel. I'm an independent material consultant and studied industrial designer. So, and I'm happy to be here.
Thank you. Happy to have you. Mr. Hartmann.
My name is Jörg Hartmann. I'm heading the fashion and technology department at Stahl. Stahl is machine builder, flat knitting machine builder, and around for 140 years now. We are based in Reutlingen, Germany. Thank you for inviting us.
Thank you for being here. Short introduction here. 3D printing is the talk of the town. It's being touted as the next industrial revolution. It seems that there's nothing 3D printing can't do. In France, the post office is installing 3D printers everywhere, and they think that they may revive their postal industry with 3D printing. But today, we're here to look at what, and maybe how, 3D printing, otherwise known as additive manufacturing, can influence and bring change to the textile industry. It could be a long shot, but the experts we have here and people who have been working with 3D printing may help us find the connections between textiles and 3D printing. For those who may be skeptic about the link between these new technologies and the textile industry, I just wanted to mention that the origin of computers is the Jacquard loom. So thanks to our industry, we have computers everywhere. So it depends on how you look at things. Today, we're 3D printing tons of materials, a lot of plastics. Here are some designers in fashion who are working with 3D printing. Iris van Herpen, obviously, and Noah Raviv also did an interesting piece mixing traditional sewing and 3D printed pieces. There is research in 3D printing plastics that may perform like a textile in a chain link type material. And there are direct connections between additive manufacturing and the textile industry if you consider that non-weaving is a form of additive manufacturing. And there's a company in England called Tamicare that is 3D printing non-woven disposable panties. It's a niche market, but it's happening there. And this is why we have Mr. Hartmann with us today. You can also consider knitting to be a form of additive manufacturing. You add layer upon layer of material to make a 3D shape. So, moving on to our speakers. I think that's the end, yeah. My first question, because we want to get the basics right, Carsten, if you can explain the three methods of 3D printing, what in 3D printing, there are three different methods. They're quite different, and I think it's good to start with that.
Yes, so in general, we have three different systems. The first is stereolithography. It's called SLA, so that's when you have a liquid that is photoactive, and when a laser beam hits this liquid, it just gets solid. So what you are doing is, out of a epoxy resin, for example, you get something that is sticking out of it, and it's hard. That's one thing. That was the beginning. Then we can also melt some small filaments. That's filament technology, and building layer by layer, so mainly thermoplastics. And we have a laser beam that is melting particles, so very fine powders, and that is the most advanced state of the art that the industry is using. So you can also melt metals, you can melt titanium, you can melt stainless steel, everything. So these are the three main principles.
Thank you. Pia, can you tell us what technique you used to 3D print your dress?
I used the laser sintering, because for me, those usual desktop printers with the plastic fiber coming out of the head, they have the surface is not really smooth in the end, and you can really see those layers. And for me, the laser sintering made a really smooth surface, and it can be much more detailed than the desktop printers do.
Yeah, the more sophisticated objects are usually laser sintered.
Yeah, and you see a lot of 3D printed objects with the desktop printer, and they look like cheap plastic stuff.
Yeah.
And those industrial ways of 3D printing, they look much more worthy.
Yeah, okay. Jörg, can you tell us, can we bring knitting into the world of 3D printing? In what ways is knitting different from 3D printing, and in what ways is it similar to what we're seeing?
Okay, that's, I think, not a short answer.
Okay, well.
In a way that everybody is on the same page, I want to tell you how knitting works. We divide knitting into different categories. One is the warp knitting technique, the other the circular, and the flatbed knitting technology. The warp knitting technology works like a loom, and it's still considered to be a knitting technology, and the circular knitting machine and the flatbed knitting machine is a weft knitting machine. Circular knitting machines, as the word say, knit circular fabrics. I think most of the fabrics you see here on the show are made on a circular machine, fine gauge, and they have limitations. And last but not least, the flatbed knitting machine technology is the most versatile technology to innovate and do 3D products, because in the flatbed knitting we can shape the panels, also called fully fashion technology. We can have real 3D elements incorporated into the panels. Those are technologies or possibilities other knitting techniques like the warp knit and the circular knit can't offer. So now, you know, we are going to speak here, you see the flat knitting machines, only about flatbed knitting. Now back to your question. Well, in a certain way, flatbed knitting is also an additive manufacturing method. We use a yarn. The yarn can have different materials, elastic yarns, solid yarns, metal yarns, all thinkable materials, and we feed those yarns into the machine and make loops while knitting. So we think the product from the bottom up, as in printing. Mm-hmm. The first row is the bottom of the fabric, and then as we add rows, the fabric grows, And that's the principle, I think, which is quite similar to 3D printing. And then once we have an idea in mind, we spec it on a paper or whatever, we have to address our ideas to a technician. A technician is a person who can handle CAD software system, in this case a specific software made in STOL. And this technician will translate your ideas about a shape into the CAD system. I also think that that works in the same way for the 3D printing with AutoCAD or whatever is a 3D system. Our software system is not a 3D system. It's a specific system designed for the purpose making knitted garments, basically. And after that, we send the program into the machine, put the yarn, the material onto the machine, run the machine, and we get a panel out of the machine at the bottom of the machine. Most of the times, this panel would not be satisfactory to the needs of the creator. So we had to go back, revert, and it works in recursion, forth and back between creator and technician until the final prototype is in place. In the additive printing, I don't know, we will hear more about it later on, I think, but we can't reverse the process. To a certain extent, we can rip off the panels, but that's not practical. After the knitting, if you incorporate 3D elements in flatbed knitting, just after knitting, the panel will go in its 3D dimensions. Whereas in the printing, it already goes in the 3D dimension while manufacturing, while doing it. That's different. So we cheat three dimensions into a 2D panel, so to speak.
Okay.
And after that, sure, there is our follow-up processes. We have to saw it, we have to link it, or whatever.
There's often one element of sewing. Even if you create an object, I mean, if we're talking about a top, you'd have seams, right. At least one or two seams.
Yeah.
But in a 3D printed, your dress has 8 panels, you said. So yeah. How did you connect the panels?
They are glued together. The thing is, if you print, the printers are not that big. So I can only print a part like that. I mean, you have printers which are a bit bigger, but yeah. So it depends on the company you're working with. And they had a printer that was not that big, so I had to print it in 8 parts. And they are they have a kind of, it's kind of a seam as well. They are stuck into each other, and then they are glued.
Have you seen renewed interest in flatbed, fully fashioned manufacturing recently? Because one of the advantages that's being touted for 3D printing is that you only use the material that you need, and there's little or no waste in the filament. The laser sintering, you have tons of waste, right? There's waste. No? Okay. No? No waste?
No.
Okay. Sorry. I thought there was one with the block and you sinter out the shape.
So you take your piece afterwards out of the powder, and the powder goes back into the machine. So you're only using the laser, just melted the particle of the powder, and then you take it off, and the rest of the powder you can reuse. So
okay.
Same.
Thank you for that. But one of the advantages of knitting a 3D shape is that there's no waste or very little waste also. There's no cutting away of pieces.
Right, that's true. As we do the shape in the machine, we can avoid the cutout sections. We usually, there are 3 different ways to make a garment. One is cut and saw, where you have a panel, straight panel, you put your shapes onto the panel and cut it out and later on sew it together. In flatbed knitting, you can get that shape directly and straight off the machine. In certain technologies, also on the flatbed knitting machine, you get the entire sweater off the machine without seams. This is the so-called knit and wear technology, seamless technology. So there is certainly a save in material doing so.
What I've also learned in my investigation on 3D printing is that these, it's sometimes called rapid prototyping, but it's slow manufacturing. How long did it take to print out your dress, Pia? Do you remember?
It took about 40 hours to print it.
40 hours. And one of the issues in 3D knitting is that it's not a cheap technology. And
right.
Is that due to the
It's not me.
Is that due to the programming, or is it due to the slowness of the machine?
I mean, knitting is a quite complex technology. And as you understand, those machines you see here on the wall, they cost between, let's say, 60 and 120,000 euro each. And in addition to that, you have to invest into the software system, which then programs the piece. But I think the crucial point to make a 3D object on a flatbed knitting machine is the knowledge of the engineers, the technicians making the programs, and the understanding between the two sides, the design side and the technical side. The technique is quite simple if you know how to do it, but the objects which are belong to innovation, they well, you can't get back to experiences in that respect, so you have to try and make things for the first time, and that takes a lot of time and understanding of the stitches. For example, to learn the software system of STOL, it takes you about 1 year until you would be capable of knitting off the machine one piece according to your taste. I don't know whether this is the same for the 3D printing, maybe likewise complex.
Pia was saying that she's learning now.
I'm learning now to do the file myself, because I worked with the company for the dress, with the 3D Activation, a German company. And yeah, I'm right now learning this in university, and I have to say it's really complex. And at first, you just think, how can I go with this program? It has four windows, and I'm but I'm getting there. Yeah. If you're really into it and you want to learn that, I can highly recommend this to you. It will be our future. So,
Karsten, can you tell us what connections you see between the world of 3D printing as it is today and textile manufacturing or garment or other products?
I must say that I don't know so much about the garment manufacturing, so it's a little bit hard. But I think one thing you have to consider is the normal shapes that can also be achieved by other ways, very simple, very cost effective, are not maybe shapes that you would put on those machines. So your design and the complexity of the part must be given and must improve your product. So with those technologies, you can really design and create as you want, as the nature is doing, for example. When there is a branch coming out of the tree, the nature is just giving a little bit support where the big branch is leaving, or the new branch is leaving the big branch, and so you can, it gives us total new freedom of creation, and that's the point when you can do other designs, other functionalities with those techniques, and the part is complex enough. So today they print out, for example, tools that make plastic parts afterwards, so the whole tool making costs can be limited into those machines. You can, for injection molding, you can have cooling systems that are next to your contour of the plastic part that you cannot produce with other systems because it's something like a snake inside. So there, those complexity, if this is given, then it's a total, it's a technology that can compete with the normal ones.
Thank you. Pia, I wanted to ask you, what did you learn from the experience and how do you see 3D printing evolving? And how could it impact the textile industry?
I think the biggest advantage is, of course, that you can reproduce your piece once you have the file as many times as you want just by pushing the button and it comes out of the printer. Of course, it's not that easy in the end because then you have to have the printer, to have the filament and all this stuff. But yeah, if it's not glued together, it comes out in one piece and you don't have to do it by hand. There's no manufacturing process, no sewing, nothing. So yeah, it will change the way of producing. And also I think
You also mentioned that there were some weak points. It
yeah,
doesn't
there
solve
are some
everything.
Weak, yeah. The thing is that we're not there yet with the material because the material is stiff. So if you want to print something fabric-like, it's not really possible yet. So also the material is still pretty fragile. And that are the weak points. But another advantage would be that you can customize the things easily. You can scan the feet of a person and then print out shoes that have the perfect fit because you have the file and it's just an adjustment in the file and then you print it out. You don't have to manufacture this to measure it all. You can just scan it and then print it. So that would be really easy to do.
Is that something that is imaginable in 3D knitting, that you scan the shape of someone's body and then print out something that's exactly made to measure?
Mm. Yes, there are some customers of ours working in the medical field, and they do body scanning for braces, for example, on one of the pictures. We have one brace, I think this is below. That's a sports brace with a high compression and measured to fit. So customers do scan the leg area and then put that straight into a program which converts it into the comfort or the stretch zones needed in certain parts of the leg, of the knee. And then the program goes straight into the machine and knits off. So once the program is there, we can repeat this program forever if we have enough material and yarn sources. Make as many, right?
Mm-hmm. Pretty interesting. Other things happening in 3D knitting with one-off products or
We have, you mean a concept for the final consumer?
Yeah.
Like a copy shop for...
Well, that's my idea is if we have 3D print shops around the corner,
okay.
When are we going to have a 3D knit shop around the corner?
I actually came yesterday, just today, back from London, where I visited two young entrepreneurs opening up a shop in the Somerset House. They asked us to give them a machine. They learned the software, which was a quite complex one. And they understood that if they want to provide a on-the-spot knitting of scarves or of sweaters, they have to go around this complicated thing, which is our programming system. And they found a way to sneak around it, reduce the complexity. So the final shop concept would be that they have a series of iPads where the visitors can print with the finger or whatever, a stick on the iPad, and do their own chakras. This will then directly be fed into the machine. And once you selected your yarns, your materials and colors, then this would instantly knit off the machine, and you can wait or come back 10 minutes later and get your scarf. That's the project, and it will be the opening day will be 12th of November. Who is interested to go there?
Scoop! What do you think of the idea, Karsten, of having a 3D knit shop or 3D print shops that, that make more interesting products? I mean, one of the things we haven't really mentioned, but which I find interesting in 3D printing, is that we're transferring to the consumer a portion of the design process and empowering individuals, where up until now we have designers who decide what kind of product they will make, produce it, put it in a store, and the consumer chooses one product or doesn't choose a product. So here we're switching the power of, we're bringing the power of creativity to the individual.
Yeah, that's right. I think when they can, it's not a real creation goes to the consumer, so it's the prosumer who is producing and consuming at the same time. But I think we, as also the guys, is you have to have a translation in between, and that has to be a smart interface. So I think we are more talking about you can choose your different styles, but a pattern is already provided behind. So starting from scratch is really tough for the consumers. But we see it also in the sneaker business, that you now go on the computer and you click and you can choose colors, and a lot of customization is going on. So why not? I think it's it will be taken maybe half a year, and every copy shop will of course have a 3D printer.
That's true. Pia, will you continue to be work in this with fashion and 3D printing to see what kind of connections will be possible tomorrow?
Yes, I am now studying art and a mix of multimedia and art. So I'm really into this combining fashion stuff with technology, also interactive textiles. But I think 3D print is the most interesting part about this, because you can just imagine something in your head and then you do the file and it comes out of the printer and it looks exactly like you imagined it before. So for me, this is really revolutionary, because I don't have to sew. I'm not the best sewer, by the way. So for me, it was the perfect thing to do, and it just came out, and I was amazed that you could just try it on the model and it fits, and it looks amazing. And it's so much more freedom in design. You can go into a third dimension. You can just add a piece on the shoulder or whatever. Of course, it's still pretty arty what I do. I mean, you can't wear that to work, but we're getting there.
Yeah, we still have to hope that they develop plastics that are a little bit more flexible, more comfortable. Though there are people like Electroloom in the U.S. who are working on a printer to make a non-woven material. They're not there yet, but what they say is that they start with a solution, so something that's liquid, with the synthetic polymer, and will print out something. Have to keep an eye on that. And are there any questions from our audience? On 3D knitting, printing, and the connections between the two.
You mentioned that there are some limits to the raw materials. So, especially you said it's fragile and it's still stiff. Who is delivering the materials, or from the raw materials? Where do you purchase this? And are there some concerns or some demanding to develop new materials?
Yes, there are a lot of companies developing these materials. If you are interested in the different materials you can use, you can, for example, go to shapeways.com and it's a platform where the consumer can just load up a file and then they send you back the printed object. And they print in better quality than those desktop printers mostly. And they have a lot of filaments they use. You can also print in porcelain or, they even have a flexible one now. But I think they still test those flexible stuff. So it's written there, just try it out, but you can't really do something that is ready yet. But you can order there also some samples from the materials they have there.
Other questions? Have you seen, Karsten, any improvements in the materials used for the 3D printing machines?
Yes, it's huge. I mean, we had also some projects where it's also possible to produce a part that is half rigid and half flexible. So I think there is nearly everything you can melt or you can sinter together is possible. You can print out gold and also or other metals and silver. So you make total new jewelries that are printed out. And I think there is also a direct part from the industry. So they use really this technology to produce. Now they produced a car. So they printed out a car in 44 hours on a machine that was 6 meter by 2 meter 50. And wow. The car is made out of 50 parts, and the company just left the fair on this car. So they printed the car, they assembled it, and it's an electric car, and they drove it. So we see there are two different things. The one is for the consumer, maybe the cheap machines. You can buy a printer for 2,000 euros, and also the companies like Shapeways, they have maybe the little better machines that are running faster, but there is also a step from laser sintering that are the most expensive machines, and they can really create parts that are completely functional, a lot of materials. You can have a PLA, for example, that's a biodegradable polymer, very common on the cheap machines, on the MakerBots. So you can create something, if the wall thickness is thin enough, that is also compostable, made out of renewable resources. And what I saw as a Kickstarter project, I think a year ago, somebody who just made a very small extrusion line to feed it with your leftovers from the packages. So you can, for example, put in your PET bottle and it makes you the filament to print PET. So you can print actually a lot of polymers that you can just melt. I think there is really no limits. The question is how big is the market? What polymers will be developed? And the flexible yarns, filaments, they are quite good, and I think it just needs a little bit of experience, feedback from the market. But we will have really nearly everything. And there are also some pastes, so you can print porcelain, for example. You can print, of course, everything you can eat, like chocolate, noodles. Barilla did print out a lot of noodles. So endless. The question is what is available for the consumer at the end of the day, but in the labs, and we will make progress there.
Thank you. Any more questions from the audience? Okay, well, thank you very much for attending.
Thank you, our speakers, for coming and sharing your experience with us. Oh, we have a question.
And before I learned a bit Blender. Blender is a free software, but it's quite complex, and there are a lot of things you have to think about, and you have to learn all the shortcuts that you get a bit fast in doing these programs. But in the end, it's amazing what you can do with it. I'm now realizing something for a 3D cave. That's something you use for car design and stuff, that you do a file and then you have a room you can walk into. It's about 3 meters long, And there you can go into, and there's a projection, and you wear some glasses, and then you can see the object in this room in 3D, and you can walk around it and look into it, and that's incredible. That's pretty, pretty amazing. I'm now studying at LMU in Munich. Yeah.
So, any more questions? Speak up. Okay, so, well, once again, thanks for coming. Thank you for sharing your experiences, and I think this is really an area to keep an eye on.
Thank you for listening to Performance Day's Functional Fabric Fair podcast. For your free entrance badge and other presentations, go to www.performancedays.eu. Copyright November 2014 by Design and Development GmbH Textile Consult. All rights are reserved.